Dr. George Pinkerton, Reel 7. So, where were you on VE Day? Do you remember?
VE Day? Yes, I was in Germany. Mm-hmm. In Brunswick, I think.
Right. And how did you hear about the news?
Yes. Well, I wasn't in Brunswick, not on VE Day itself. No, not the day it actually ended. I mean, VE Day was some weeks later, wasn't it?
Right, yes, or when you...
But when the war actually ended, we were just coming up to Lübeck.
Right.
We heaved a huge sigh of relief. Mm-hmm. Funnily enough, people go on about bombing of Munich and so on, and say, of course, by that time there was no German activity, but we were shot up that morning.
Okay.
Yeah, we were in a lager in a sort of young forest up north, and two airplanes came along and had a go at us. It didn't hit anything, but they were there, and so it's no good saying there was no resistance, because there was.
Mm. Were there any celebrations, or was it?
Oh, yes, there were, yes. Mm. And we had sort of picture parades, and a nice little picture parade in Lübeck. We had a battalion of the Seaforth Highlanders, and of course, to our amazement, instead of sort of turning their backs to it and looking away, the Germans came out in large quantities to applaud this pipe band. Extraordinary.
Yeah. Perhaps they were as glad as you were that the war...
I think they were. I'm sure they were, yes, yes. Mm. As I say, one felt very sorry for the great majority of them. Mm. But the Seaforth were a great success. I like pipes at a distance.
Mm.
But we had a pipe band on the Del Pacifico when we were going to Sicily, and they used to have a piper in the dining room. Oh God.
A bit too close, really.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So, of course, the war against Japan went on. I mean,
yes.
Were you afraid that you might get sent there?
Well, you know, we were actually sort of keying up to get sent there. But somebody had a bright idea of dropping a bomb on it.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Padre in your...
yes.
When you were talking about your time abroad. That Padre obviously did a great service.
Oh, yes,
did
he
meet
did.
Other Padres at all?
I would think so.
Your reaction to them?
I liked them, yes. Well,
really?
I knew a few of them, but Wilfred and I were the ones that really knew each other. He got a military cross.
Mm.
But he and I were very good pals. Doctor and saint.
Did you have any contact at all with military police at any stage? Or?
No, not really.
Mm. I won't ask you for your opinions of the RAMC, since you were in it. What about conscientious objectors? I mean, did you have any feelings about them at the time?
Not really, no, because one or two of them did rather good work as ambulance drivers and things like that.
Mm.
I think it was a conscientious objector, a little ambulance driver chap who used to come and fetch casualties from this horrible place, Ariely, because we either had to send them our casualties down on mules, which was quite fun, except for the casualties, or else this chap used to come along unmolested, really, along a road completely exposed to everybody's sight, in one of these funny little four-wheel drive Humber ambulances, and collect ambulances and go off down there. But
how did you get hold of the mules?
They were Cypriot mules. There was a I don't know what they call a company or something of Cypriot muleteers. I got to get quite good at mules.
Mm.
You have to be, they're rather odd creatures because you have to know, I mean, they were big mules, you have to know how much weight they can take. And of course, you've got to load them up equally.
Mm.
So if you put one patient, if you've only got one patient, you put the patient on one side and a jerry can of water on the other.
They're quite difficult animals, aren't they?
They are, but I like mules.
Mm.
You know, I never found that they were particularly unpleasant creatures.
Oh, right. So you had a had some well-trained mules
there. Well, they are well-trained yes, mules, yeah. Yes, I say they're Cypriots, the chaps who did them. Whether they were, I suppose they were in the army, I don't know.
Mm.
They wore some sort of uniform.
Okay. Did you come across any cases of self-inflicted wounds?
Yes, the odd one. But about, I can only think of one. I think a chap shot his toe up or something like that. Mm. And my most extraordinary thing, somewhere or other, in the middle of nowhere, we were all in tents, we must have been all in tents at the time, and there was a rifle shot rang out. And a little while later, somebody came over and said, could you come over and see old so-and-so shot himself? So I went over to see old so-and-so, who shot himself through the head quite deliberately. And while I was seeing poor old so-and-so, the chap next door to him was fast asleep. He said, what are you doing? This chap had shot himself right next to him. And all this shamozzle, it never worked, this bloke up.
So, what did you do with the self-inflicted wound? I mean, what did you say to them? I mean,
well, I don't know what you did. I suppose by the time anybody sort of took any action, they'd probably gone further down the line.
Right. And shell shock was another thing.
Yes. It did occur, of course. I mean, a lot of people got edgy.
Mm.
The thing to do was to move them before they got too edgy.
Were you able to spot people then?
Yes, you were.
What would be the signs?
Well, you know, you usually pick when someone was getting a bit nervy and seeing things that really weren't there and so on, you know.
Right. Mm.
And then you suggested it might be a good idea if they went back to the, had a few days at the rear detachment, so, you know, back at the base or so.
Mm.
Mm. Which usually seemed to work.
Right. And they might be able to come back again then?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So was that something, I mean, would company commanders refer people to you like saying, I'm a bit worried about him?
Yes, they would. Mm.
Right. Because, I mean, in some of the big bombardments, certainly I've heard about in France, you know, I mean, people, unless it's the same person being described, but after 4, 5, 6 days of continuous bombardment, you know, there seemed to be, must have been quite a few people who were just, couldn't cover the noise anymore.
I'm sure they were.
How did you feel about the divide between officers and men? Because, I mean, the living conditions and the pay and...
I don't think it was a point, really. You know, I think everybody had their job to do and got on and did it.
Mm. Do you think there was ever any resentment, or did you ever feel...
Well, I must say, certainly in the in regiment I was with, the officers were extremely considerate of their men.
Mm. Which would mean what exactly?
Well, I mean, they would see that... they would water their horses before they put them away, if you know what I mean. That sort of thing. Mm. They would always see the men were looked after first. Even if they hadn't had a drink for a week, they'd see that the men had a drink before they...
Right, okay.
I was asked by an American, funnily enough, when I was out there the other month, is it true that the British officers serve the other ranks with Christmas dinner? Their Christmas dinner served at them? I said, yes, of course it is. Gee...
Oh, the American army doesn't do that then.
Well, apparently not.
Oh, right. Right. So when you had jaundice, I mean, what did you feel about the medical treatment you received?
I didn't like the matron. But no, otherwise perfectly all right. It was nothing wrong there. Except, as I say, they starved me until I managed to sneak an extra lunch.
So on your demobilisation, I mean, what was the procedure like? I mean, you went to somewhere in the north of England, didn't you?
Yes, you went somewhere in the north of England. Don't think I had a medical. And you handed in your paybook, and were measured for your suit, and told to go away and be a good civilian.
Did it seem rather a sort of anticlimactic sort of
occurrence? Yes, it did in a way. Yes. The other thing I remember, because I had a couple of leaves at home, just the odd week, a couple of times. I remember the first one coming back, being absolutely rather petrified as to whether my wife would get on.
Mm.
When we hadn't seen each other for years, and I really was worried, and I think she felt just the same. Am I going to be able to put up with this strange man? And of course, Barry, the second son, I didn't see till he was 3 and a half.
Really?
Yeah. But actually, in fact, we were right back to the word go from the moment we got together again.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the children didn't know you, did really?
Well,
did
Barry
they?
Had never seen me.
Mm.
I mean, Robin knew me, and of course, Fran arrived after the war, and Jane a year or two later than that. But Barry couldn't think of who this strange man was.
So quite difficult, really, to slot back in
very,
with a mother and two children.
Very difficult, yeah.
So did you get a severance payment or pension?
Yes, I did. I got about £80.
Mm.
And you never guess what I spent it on. Perhaps you wouldn't guess what I spent it on. It was in the days of... The first days of television, and I thought, well, as I'm going to be a permanent doctor, I'm not going to be able to get out a lot. So I bought a funny little black and white television, which just about took my £80.
Right.
And,
was it one of those with the tiny little screen on the very tall stand?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yes, that's right. I remember. Yeah, Bakelite.
No, it wasn't Bakelite. It was a wooden one, but but it had a tall, narrow screen.
Knobs.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
Right. So money well spent.
Well, it certainly was, because we had no end of fun with it. When I brought it home, it was at the Wimbledon time, and Robin was quite a small boy at the time, and he looked at this one, and someone said, "We're watching the tennis," and. And he said, someone came in the room and said, "Come and look." He said, "There are little men batting about in it."
Did you get any sort of war pension?
No.
No. Did you have anything to do with assessing people for pensions at all, or recommending them to be assessed when you were seeing people?
No, no, I didn't. No.
Right.
No.
How do you feel about the way Britain treats its war pensioners or those who've served?
Well, I think they were a bit behind him, weren't they? You know, I think they could have done a bit sooner.
Right. So how did you take to civilian life? Because you'd been a soldier for quite a time. Was it difficult to get used to it?
Not really. Not really. No. Although I was with regular units all the time, I never got... I don't think I ever got regimentalised.
Mm.
Although I had an enormous and still have an enormous admiration for the regular army.
Mm.
I couldn't have wanted a better, more capable, more able lot.
Mm. Did you ever have any sort of personal knowledge of any courts-martial or disciplinary procedures?
Yes, we had. Well, I wasn't directly involved in it, but it was an exercise in Persia, and the troops had come in to get tea, and one of them, one chap was late and came into the cookhouse. And the cook was a nice and very popular chap, and he said, "Where's my tea?" And the cook said, "You're late. You can't have no tea." And this chap upped his rifle and shot the cook dead. And there was another chap there drinking, he said, "She's at my tea." So he was arrested. And he was court-martialed and sentenced to death. And he was awaiting confirmation of his death sentence. and he had some toothache, and a very nice dentist we had who went and had a look at the chap, and spent a lot of time on his dental work, and then he came back, and it wasn't until after he'd done all this that he found out it was due to be shot next week, and he was so cross. But he wasn't shot, in fact, because the corps commander or someone had changed hands, and so he was commuted.
So where did that court martial take place?
Oh, I think in Iran, probably.
Right. Yeah. So it was commuted what to life in prison?
I don't know. Yeah. No, don't know. I don't know if it was commuted. Old Dennis Glass didn't have it on his dental workshop away.
That was the dentist, Dennis Glass.
Yes.
I mean, was the military law respected generally with it? I mean,
I suppose it was. I didn't really think about it very much.
Oh. Wasn't really an issue.
No.
Right. Okay. So, what would have been the physical effects of war on you? Do you think?
I was a lot fatter when I came home, having spent the last 9 months or so after the war living a rather cushy life. And I had to get a bit of weight off when I got home.
Because you were quite an athlete, weren't you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say. Well, I suppose I was really, wasn't bad. Mm. Not as good as old Pran.
So did you row after the war?
Mm. Once or twice. I vaguely remember that. I can't really think why. But when we moved away from London, of course, I packed it in.
What do you think the mental effects of having been to war were on you, or are on you now?
Difficult to answer, isn't it? I think one feels more top. It's a lovely clock, then.
It is, the tolling of the bell, yeah.
I think more tolerant. Mm. But
you met a lot of people and dealt with a lot of people.
Met a lot of people, yes. And had some very good friends. Mm.
Did you get nightmares or flashbacks?
Very, very rarely. Mm. Very rarely. Mm. I haven't had any one for some years, right? I very rarely got a flashback.
Mm. But you haven't had any nightmares for some years now.
I don't think so. Some years since I've had one.
Right. Okay. But you obviously did for.
Yes, not very often. Like perhaps once or twice a year. That was all.
Right. Yeah. So, a continuing presence then.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Right. Is there anything else you'd like to add? I know it's an endless subject, really.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting experience, really. It does have some disadvantages in that all one's childhood friends disappear. Because, those who survived have all gone off and done something different.
Right.
And you come home and all the people who used to live nearby have all moved away and so on. They just have a terribly disruptive effect in that way. And I have very, very few friends, pre-war friends left. Mm. And those are dying like flies.
Yes, I mean, a huge movement of population
That's the thing that did it. And I say my lasting memory of the war really is the appalling plight of these wretched displaced persons.
Really? Come back to that, mm. Yes.
Yeah.
What could have been done for them? I mean, it was
nothing.
A huge problem.
Huge problem. And, of course, the people who were supposed to deal with this were absolutely useless. We had a very good RASC Lance Corporal who handled the catering for about 250,000 people. And he did it beautifully. I mean, he sorted this out, but it was a Lance Corporal, And there were majors and God knows what else was supposed to be doing this, and they hadn't got a clue.
Because they were displaced for years, weren't they?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes. That's why when I was, I was for a time, was chairman of Sue Ryder Home. And of course she was very much involved with the Polish Poles, and in fact she was Lady Ryder of Warsaw, of course.
Yes.
Poor old Sue Ryder, she died.
Right.
Strange little woman, did you ever meet her?
Yes, yes, I did.
Strange little lady.
Yes, but you could feel the determination.
Oh, God,
you?
Blimey.
Goodness me.
Yeah, I mean she used to have. Personal assistance used to last about 3 months, and they then went off to a mental hospital. I should think if they didn't, they needed to. Oh, she was an amazing little person. So sad that the whole thing got messed up at the end.
Right, okay. Well, it's been absolutely fascinating. So.
Well, I'm glad I haven't talked too much.
No, not at all. No, it's been really interesting, really worthwhile. Dr. George Pinkerton, that's end of Reel 6. Read that again. Dr. George Pinkerton, end of Reel 7. And thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure.